Welcome to a Frugal Athlete podcast, where we interview athletes, both current and former, on the prudent financial practices and smart career decisions they are making. In these episodes, we dive into what it means to be a frugal athlete. You might think that frugal just means being cheap, but as you will soon learn, being frugal is more complex than that. Hey, what's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of a Frugal Athlete podcast. Today, we got a very special guest, someone that I've had the pleasure of recently meeting, but we've immediately hit it off, not only because we have same passions, but he's doing a lot of great things from an impact perspective when it comes to money management. We got Ryan Schechner on the podcast today. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. I appreciate the opportunity, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. It means a lot. You know, you're a busy man. You got a lot of things in the works. I can't wait to, you know, dive into some of those things. But before we get into that, would love to know more about you for the audience.
Yeah. You know, I thought I was going to be a major league baseball player and had a shoulder injury actually the last game of my freshman season in college. And complete reconstruction. It was nasty. But from there, I got into the financial services space really because I didn't really have another option. I mean, that was like the one industry that would accept me because they always love athletes. And so I, you know, worked my butt off and moved down to Charlotte probably 3 years after I started. I grew up in Milwaukee. So I moved down to Charlotte, North Carolina about 3 years after I started and built one of the quickest growing financial planning firms in the Southeast. And then right before COVID hit, I met a kid that kind of changed the direction I was going with everything. And so, yeah, it's been a roller coaster, very fast roller coaster ever since.
No, that's amazing. And let's take it back to your college days. Let's talk about that injury, you know, because a lot of times, you know, you had hopes and plans to be in the MLB. And obviously we see MLB contracts. They're very fulfilling. When that injury happens, what is the mindset for you? You know, a lot of athletes face this, whether it's injury, whether it's transition. What was that mindset for you personally?
Yeah, you know, it was tough, right? Because from 13 on, I was scouted. And in Wisconsin, it's rare that you get scouted by, you know, at least, you know, in the mid 90s, right? I mean, it's cold. They don't play much. Scouts kind of hang out in warm weather places. So, and so I was scouted and that was where I thought I was going. And so I put all my attention on being the best athlete I could be. And so when that injury happened, I mean, it ranged from, you know, initially just shock, like, oh, it's good. Like, I'll bounce back from this. And when you get the final diagnosis that like, hey, it's not going to be the same. You're not going to be playing at the same level. And then the reality sinks in that dream is, you know, gone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's terrifying, right? Because then you're like, well, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And so from there, you know, I'm listening to a lot of, you know, talks and people around me were gave me good advice, right? Like, deal with it, but you got to move on. Like, you can't sit here and feel sorry for yourself. And so I just started looking for, hey, can I get an internship that would, you know, help me get a good job when I graduate? And, you know, I felt like I needed that internship because I was a career 2.4 GPA student, right? Like nobody was going to look at my GPA and be like, oh yeah, we got to get that guy. I was the, you know, the last pick, for lack of a better word, right? On the team. And so I got that internship and with people that were a lot smarter than me. But I realized really quick that I could outwork them. And a lot of the skills that I developed, from an athlete playing ball from five on, really translated well to the real world. And so, I just outworked people.
No, I love that. I love that. And when you talk about outwork, that's like one of the qualities that, you know, companies, corporations, brands love about athletes as they transition into the corporate space. But when it comes to you personally, what are some other skills that you took from sports, specifically baseball, and translated over to, you know, the financial world?
Yeah. So, you know, I think the biggest one is, you know, in baseball, if you get out of every 10 at bats, if you get a hit 3 out of 10 times, like, you're a legend.
Yeah. So that's true.
It's like, you know, 7 out of 10. So the vast 70% of the time, you're not going to achieve the success that you're looking for, but that's not the end of the world because you always get the next at bat. And so the expectation that I was going to have success right away wasn't there, right? Because I knew that, hey, I'm going to take my lumps, but, you know, I eventually will work things out and I will have success. So that was, you know, that was probably the biggest thing. And then it's the ability to outwork, you know, people that are more talented. And I think you see that a lot. You know, we've got the NFL draft coming up here. You're going to see guys that have so much more talent getting picked. And then you're going to have a guy that gets picked in one of the later rounds that ends up having a better career than some of the first round picks. And it's because they have that mentality that I've got to put in the work. And if I do that, then I can achieve some of the things that I was wanting to achieve that maybe some of the more talented people, that they won't. So those are probably the two biggest things. The work, and then failure's a part of it, learning how to rebound. And then probably the third thing, if I say my top three, is the ability to adjust. Yeah. And so, you know, if I've got a pitcher he's got a good breaking ball, I need to be able to adjust and hit that, right? He's not going to cater to me and throw me a fastball if I want it. And so it's the same thing in the work environment. I mean, things may not go according to plan, but it's the ability to figure out and assess the situation and then adjust what you're doing to have success as quick as possible is probably, those would say my top three.
No, I love that. And, you know, what I love about sports, and I'm sure we're going to get into it in a little bit, but the analogies that you can use as you explain financial literacy, you know, you talked about at bats and, you know, 3 for 10 makes you a genius. A lot of people talk about in the venture capital space, you know, 3 for 10 and, you know, you're probably managing over $100 million, $1 billion type of dollars assets under management. So it's stuff that you can translate. You know, there's different things like in baseball, you know, you don't have to go for the home run every time, you know, get on base. And eventually you're going to score your runs. Can you talk about that as you've transitioned now into the financial space and, you know, the work you do from an education standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point because I think the thing that so all my transition into the financial space happened right when COVID started. And it was because I met a kid had reached out to me, played basketball for UNC Charlotte. And through that interview, it was clear that he didn't have a very good idea on financial matters. And so wanting then to help out, you know, he said the team and the coach were on board with having a presentation, really. And so I started to work a presentation. And the whole point of it was really, it has to be attractive and to me as the student athlete. So someone that maybe isn't as engaged in the academic side, it had to be entertaining. It had to be easy to understand. And then it had to be easy to implement. And so those were kind of the three cornerstones. And so the easy to understand piece was, well, let's just explain everything in a language that they know. You know, it's far too often in the finance world, people, you know, they learn big words and they use, you know, industry jargon.
Yeah.
And it's like, it confuses people, but nobody ever says it, right? Because we have an ego that says, hey, yeah, I got to nod and I'm going to pretend like I know what this guy's talking about because I don't want to look stupid.
Exactly.
And so we as the advisors, right, or the educators, we need to adjust how we are explaining things. And if we can explain it through athletics, then everybody that is, you know, a fan of athletics, you don't have to play a sport, you know, you just have to be a fan of athletics. You're going to get it. And that's where we're at right now, I think. And, you know, I'd be curious if you agreed on this too. There's a knowledge gap and it's because things sometimes are presented in a too complex manner. And that's why there's such a, you know, a problem in the finance world, why people don't, you know, make all the right choices. It's because, you know, there's just that gap there. And that's, I think, what you know, when we hit it off, it's because we're both trying to solve that. So
I think that's a great point. You know, when it comes to, you know, finances, I liken it to like sports. If you're coming to a conversation where it's soccer experts and they're talking about offsides and formations, and you're going to be like a deer in the headlights. And the same is in finance. So how can we translate these financial lessons, financial insights into layman's terms for anyone and everyone to understand? And sports is kind of like the universal language. Yeah. So if we're able to use finances and kind of break it down, like, all right, you need to understand diversification. All right, act like you're a general manager of a team and you're having a rookie, you're having a veteran, you're having a star player, you're having a utility player. These are different ways to tell these stories, which, you know, now we're starting to see, you know, people like myself, yourself, other people in the game that are, you know, using financial stories and lessons and kind of breaking them down in different ways. And it doesn't just have to be sports. I think it's definitely tremendously helping across the board. But I want to ask, and I kind of want to double down on the question, because what sparked your whole journey, like the way you've blossomed into this financial literacy impact space, is because of the one student athlete that reached out to you. If I was a student athlete coming out, what are like the five immediate financial things, like the playbook that you feel like is necessary for anyone to understand to, get them on the right foot?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think first thing that I start with is you got to get your money mindset right. Right. Mm-hmm. And you have to understand that we take a lot of our beliefs about money from our past experiences, and that comes from either, you know, and a lot of times that's negative, right? Because 80% of our thoughts that we have on a daily basis are negative. And that comes from, you know, basically four things. So trauma, drama, daddy, and mama, right? And so we see our parents and how they dealt with money. And that's just kind of bred into us, right? That was, we mirror those behaviors, or there was a horrible financial situation that we experienced as a kid. And we take that with us, right? And so, a lot of times if we come from a negative financial situation, we got to get our mind right. We have to realize that, hey, this isn't, I don't have to repeat these mistakes. I've got a new path ahead of me and I can start clean and I can and move forward. And I always liken the money mindset to like a top tier athlete, right? Yeah. And so, Tiger Woods, since we're kind of in golf season, everybody uses the Michael Jordans and the Kobe's, but the Tiger Woods example, I say this guy, he views himself. Now I would disagree. I think he's one of the most talented golfers out there, but he doesn't view himself that way. Right. And there were times in his Hall of Fame speech that he mentioned where he would go to, a tournament as a kid, and they wouldn't, because of the color of his skin, they wouldn't let him in to put his shoes on. And so he could have let that affect him, right? But the only question he asked is, what's the course record and where's the first tee? And so his mindset was, I'm not going to let this stuff bother me. I'm only going to focus on what I can control. And I'm going to go out and I'm going to set a record. I'm going to prove you wrong. And then the other piece was his caddy, the caddy that was with him the longest time, said, the one thing that Tiger Woods never did that everybody else did when they went in after a Sunday round and they signed their scorecard, everybody would look at where they stood on the chart to see if, you know, what place they were in. Yeah. And next to that was the dollar amount that they earned. Tiger Woods never looked at that, because it wasn't about making the money. It was about winning. Right. Yeah. That was everything he did from his workouts, and everything was about winning. And so it doesn't matter where we've come from. If we're laser focused and we develop what our money mindset is, then, you know, we're going to have success, because we're going to filter out the other stuff, the flashy purchases and that type of stuff. I'd say number two is as soon as possible, get your credit right, because most anything you want to do financially is going to be based on your credit score. And so let's make sure we understand how that score is made. And then let's do the right things to make sure that we're managing that score and it's not managing us, because a bad score can cost you opportunity and it can cost you money. I'd say number three is watch out who you let in your circle. And that's from, you know, managing fraud, not just from advisors and people trying to get, you know, help you invest your money, but online, and just be careful what you're doing, because so much of our financial life is online now. And I mean, I get clients, I had a client call the other day asking if we drafted, you know, $20,000 for, you know, some investments. And I don't do that. I don't have standing orders, which is industry jargon. We just said, don't do that. But I don't have standing orders for my clients just because of that reason. Right. And so we knew that that was fraud. And I'd really say the, you know, you asked for five, I'm gonna give you four, but understand what your money, you know, what investment you're putting it in and what it's supposed to do for you, and have the right expectation. And so to make that easier to understand, it's, you know, would you expect an offensive lineman that you drafted to be able to run a 4.240 and run a good receiving route? Mm-hmm. No, because that's not the his purpose isn't to catch the ball, right? It's not even to run, really. It's to block. And so make sure you're judging investment opportunities based on where they're supposed to fit inside your overall strategy. And don't get confused with, you know, if something's supposed to be a conservative investment, it's not supposed to get 20% return. That's not the goal of it. So make sure wherever you're putting your money, it fits with your strategy and you have the right expectations of it.
No, I love that. Thank you for providing that playbook. I think it's important for not only student athletes, but professional athletes to have like kind of a set pathway to building, you know, whatever it is what they want with their life. But it first starts with financial stability and financial literacy. Yeah. Can you talk about, you know, you're an author as well. Talk about, you know, your book that you've already launched and your upcoming book that, you know, we've been able to talk about a little bit offline.
Yeah, absolutely. So the my first book, which was kind of a surprise, it wasn't even really supposed to be a book. It was supposed to be a presentation to North Carolina Charlotte's basketball team. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I, again, 2.4 GPA, not an author. And so I dictated everything. And I just, again, it was with the premise of I want to make it entertaining, easy to understand, and then easy to implement. And so I sent it to a buddy who sent it to some publishers. I sent it to my buddy just to make sure it flowed okay. And he sent it to publishers, start calling, and they're like, hey, we want to do your book. And I laughed. I'm like, no, it's not a book. It's a presentation. You got the wrong guy. And so they worked on me and worked on me. And so eventually I was like, all right, if you say it's a book, we can do a book. And so through that editing process, then I started getting connected to more and more, you know, pro athletes and, you know, took some of their ideas. Anthony Tolliver co-authored it. Oklahoma and Dallas Cowboy, Roy Williams did the foreword on it. And really it's been Marcus Ogden. A lot of these guys really connected and gave their insights to help build it out. And so what we said is, hey, there's two aspects. There's a foundational aspect that we need to lay out from a finance standpoint. Far too many people want to get into the sexy fun stuff on what should I invest in and all that, but they skip the foundation, the footwork piece of, you know, being an athlete. They skip that. They, you know, you have to have good technique and good fundamentals as an athlete in order to excel at the next level. And if you don't have that, then you're opening yourself up for failure. And so let's do a foundation book. And then let's get into, you know, the more for book number two, let's get into the, you know, the sexy fun stuff. And let's not come at it from a where I think a lot of presentations that I've seen is, hey, I, you know, I do stocks and all that type of stuff. And this is the path forward. Right. Let's talk about everything you can invest in. And I think if you educate people and simplify it, then they're going to be able to determine, hey, should I put money in stocks or should it be real estate or should it be crypto or should it? There's a lot of ways to make money and get wealthy. And so let's just let's throw them all out there and let's see what you gravitate towards. And the better you understand something, the more likely you are to fulfill that, you know, that plan and that strategy. And really at the end of the day, that's what you know, you and I and a lot of the other players in this space are about is we got to get people financially successful, and who cares what it's in? Yeah. Let's just get them financially successful, because then the trickle down of that is only positive. So yeah, book number two is on the way. Book number one, surprisingly, I attribute this to the big change in college athletics with the name, image, and likeness, because it launched 5 days after that, and mm-hmm. it hit bestseller and all that type of stuff. So definitely not expected, but hopefully I can repeat it for number two.
Nice. And what's number two about? You mentioned NIL, and I know this upcoming book is like specifically catered towards name, image, and likeness, and how student athletes can best prepare.
Yeah, book number one, actually, we get into name, image, and likeness a little bit, even though it wasn't technically launched at the time. Book number two is going to be about, it's explaining everything financial, right? So mutual funds, ETFs, stocks, bonds, cryptocurrency, NFTs, different types of commercial real estate, residential, you know, flipping mm-hmm. houses, Airbnb type real estate. So starting a business, anything you can invest in is going to be book number two. And we're going to do it all again through the language of sport. So we're going to make it extremely simple to understand. And we're going to give, you know, we're going to give a good enough overview so that if something sparks your interest, hey, you at least understand it. Now you can start investigating and find the right person then to help you out with it.
Oh, I love that. And then specifically to the brand building program that you're building, can you speak on that as well?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And so this all stemmed from a parent of a three-star offensive lineman, junior, reached out to me and started asking about NIL. And, you know, you think of offensive linemen, they're typically more reserved. They're not usually out on social media. And that was the case with this guy. And so he said, he was asked eventually if I could help his son get on social media and do it the right way. At the time, I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that right now. Like, I was actually getting ready to go up and talk to Illinois football about branding. I said, let me think this through. I don't know if I want to do that, and I'll get back to you when I get back. And so, you know, a week later, I called him up because my big hesitation was I don't want to just be out there telling people what to post
socials and stuff.
Yeah, that's, I mean, there's plenty of people that do that. If there was a way I can do that, plus add so much value, and maybe not value that the kids see now, but will help pan out down the road, then that would be something I would entertain. And so I connected with a guy that I know that does these behavioral and personality assessments on CEOs and executives.
Okay.
And I just asked him, hey, if we took this and we gave these profiles to high school and collegiate, even professional athletes, could we determine a couple things? First, could we figure out, hey, what careers would they have because of their personality and how they were made and how they see the world? Could we identify the careers that would align best with them as a person? In which case, then we have more success and happiness and all that. Could we do that? Could we identify a social media strategy that fits, that we can identify the platform and what to post so that it highlights the pros, right? The benefits that this individual brings to the market, so that we could, for high school athletes, help with recruiting, because the transfer portal is completely changing that game right now. Yeah. And then name, image, and likeness, and trying to get deals, but at the same time, help them start networking in industries that whenever they transition out of athletics, they already have, you know, they know what industry to get into, and they know what, you know, they have relationships there so that they can get careers done. And so he came back and he was like, yeah, Ryan, we can absolutely, it can be used for that. And so then the work went into, all right, how do we build this out? And so we launched that 5 weeks ago now. And I'll tell you what, this thing is, you talk about on fire. This thing is, the need was definitely there. And so we call it NIL and Beyond, and it's a brand building program. And so I say I'm kind of like a magician in it, because I want to relate to what the student athletes are focused on. Yeah. And that's building their brand for either, you know, recruiting or NIL deals or endorsements, that sort of thing. But the sleight of hand piece is I also want to be, you know, at the same time getting them career opportunities. And maybe they don't even understand that we're doing it at the same time. So that when they need it, all that is there for them. And there's no struggles after athletics. They can just a seamless move into that world. And they have, again, a good idea of what they should go into and how much money they can make from that career. So yeah, this thing is, it's been a ton of fun, and it's on fire right now. It's having a lot of fun with that one.
No, that's really cool. I love the fact that, you know, it helps figure out the best career pathways, because a lot of times, you know, the sport that you're playing, you know, the, you know, work you got to do to hopefully make it pro. But then when you are done playing, it's kind of like, uh-oh, how do I find my second game? And a lot of times, you know, only 2% of student athletes go pro, but everyone is going to be pro in life. So what are the things that you need to do to make sure that you can best excel in that next game? So to have that assessment is very important. When it comes to, you know, the information and education that you have, what are some of the student athletes like gravitating towards, or what are like some of their common questions around, you know, personal finance?
So we cover a lot on money mindset, right? Because we carry a lot of baggage with us. So we try and break that down so that they can start fresh and start clean, so know that they don't have to carry on those mistakes. We talk a lot in my programs about really three-stage in investing. So having, you know, emergency reserves as stage one. Once we kind of cover that, then stage two is retirement. So that could mean from a professional athlete, that could mean after your contract is up, or it could mean if you're just entering the workforce, like you just said, the majority of athletes are going to, then it's retirement. So is that 65? Is that 70? And whatever you put money in there, it has to do one thing when you need it. And regardless of what you put it in, it has to do that same thing. And that's turn into an income whenever you retire. And so you have to understand how that's going to happen in whatever you put money into. And then third thing, this is your fun stuff. So if you want the Bentley, sweet, go get it. If you want to do the IPO investing, love it. Beach house, go get it. But let's make sure we have those two things taken care of so that we can, the first two categories taken care of so that we can, you know, really, really have fun with it stress-free in that third stage. And so we answer a lot of questions and we work through, I get a lot of questions on that. They ask, you know, specific investments and how you would view them and that sort of thing. You know, the fraud stuff we cover a lot, and then budgeting. It's always, you know, I think they view budgeting, and I did too when I was, you know, first out of school, as a negative thing. It tells you what you can't do, right? and it could be like that if you let it be like that, but it budgeting just means, hey, you can't go overboard on the fun stuff. Yeah. And so allocate what you're going to put towards your fun stuff. And then we do, you know, our savings and you know, our expenses and all that with the rest of it. So those are probably, and, you know, that, and then with name, image, and likeness, taxes, what does that look like? And because that's a huge, that's a bomb that a lot of student athletes just figured out, like, oh crap, it's just not like working at McDonald's. Yeah. I've got, you know, I earned income in this state, so now I have to pay tax in this state, even though I live in this state, and, you know, there's no withholdings. And so it's just, it's a monster that they're figuring out in real time. And so there's a lot of questions that I get on that.
Oh, that's really good. The fact that they're asking questions, I think it's important, because, as you know, what I always stress is you got to be genuinely curious in order to, you know, have the best pathway and the best understanding of your own money. When it comes to working or, you know, finding a financial expert or financial advisor, what are some common questions, or what are the things that, in your opinion, that you need to look out for?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of people that call themselves advisors, but technically aren't advisors. And so, you know, a really good resource is, you know, FINRA Broker Check or looking at the SEC because SEC Securities and Exchange Commission websites, because you can tell, hey, is this person, are they who they say they are? And have they done anything in their past that, you know, I wouldn't like? So has someone sued them before, or have they committed fraud, or, you know, gone through bankruptcy or any of that type of stuff? Because that has to be disclosed when you're, you know, when you're licensed in the investment world. And so, you know, that's step number one, just make sure they are who they say they are. If they, you know, if they can't explain stuff simply to you so that you understand, then move on to the next person. I mean, there's plenty of people out there that, you know, that can help you, right? Make sure they have your best interest, and how do they put your best interest first? And then give experience, give, you know, people that, you know, current clients, that they can reach out to and just ask how, you know, how that relationship is. Do they say what they, you know, do they follow through on what they say they're going to do, that type of stuff. And if someone's hesitant in any of that, then, you know, it may not be a red flag, but it should cause questions. Right. Yeah. And so if someone is, you know, upfront, honest with anything, then, you know, that shouldn't be too big of an issue. So I'd say those are probably the big things. Just make sure you keep that circle. You understand who's walking in that circle, and you make sure you vet them, because they're watching out for a lot, you know, and that could be an accountant, that could be attorneys. You know, you see a lot of bad stuff happen to people, and they don't have to be just professional athletes. And it's stuff that, had they asked the right questions, then that could have been prevented.
Yeah. You know, obviously, you know, keeping it on student athletes, and actually professional athletes as well. Student athletes are now having the opportunity to make money. So they're looking for, you know, different unique offerings. Whereas professional athletes are now in the athlete investor, athlete entrepreneur mindset. What are you most excited about with this new phenomenon? And then what are you most worried about?
So I think it's great, right? And because, and even though I'm a traditionalist from a, you know, student athlete perspective, right? Because that's just the environment I grew up in. I think it's phenomenal because now you're getting to see how creative a lot of these kids are, mm-hmm. and what they're able to create, and the different ways that they're creating it. And so I love the NIL from the aspect of it gives the small business owner in their local neighborhood or city that they came from the ability to now advertise or endorse in the college athletic world, or even professional athletic world with some of the platforms that are out there. Whereas before, you know, you think of College Game Day, you have Dr. Pepper and Home Depot, and, you know, a small restaurant can't compete with Home Depot financially, right? And so it's given the small business owner the opportunity to play in this space. And it also gives then the student athlete, and I don't think you have to be the quarterback or the star running back, receiver, or, you know, whatever, point guard. You can go out and find your deals. So be creative in how you come up with these deals. You know, in our NIL and Beyond program, we're talking to offensive linemen about, you know, when you go out on a Tuesday night, go to the same restaurant, to go to your favorite restaurant, and do a autograph signing for kids, get some sort of, you know, comp for it, and get free food. And let's work a deal that way, right? So if for the real entrepreneurs, and we're seeing tons of podcasts come out, like Darian Rencher, I love the Players Club podcast that he put out there. He does great work. It's given them now an opportunity to be creative and be entrepreneurial. So I think you have, that's what gets me really excited, right? Is the opportunities that it presents for both small business and the athletes. I think the biggest danger or the concern I have is, you know, everyone kind of is used to this conferences as they're laid out. And, you know, the idea that there's going to be the conferences or the schools that have the most money are going to be able to set up deals that, you know, maybe you get, like, if you look at college football, you've got the Alabamas or the Clemsons, right? Yeah. And then you have a Cincinnati that came in this year being the first non-Power Five to ever get in the football playoff. Well, the finances behind the Alabamas and the big boys and the Cincinnati's are completely different. So does that create a space where the big boys can completely separate themselves so that you don't get the smaller programs that pop in there? And so I'm concerned about that because, you know, everyone likes the underdog story. But I think soccer is the way to solve it, right? If you look at the Euro League
promotion relegation, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would be phenomenal, right? So I think if the interests of all are kind of aligned, then I think there's ways around what's inevitable and what's going to happen. But yeah, I think that's probably the biggest thing is that you get, you know, you're used to being able to, at least in theory, your school you root for is going to be able to, you know, play for a national championship. And, you know, that may be not anymore, right? You may have big schools that are in a different division. So.
Perfect. Lastly, before I let you leave, and I want to thank you again, we're going to have all your information in the show notes. So, you know, if people want to, you know, check out your book, you know, speaking offline and being able to get to know you over the past few months that I have, one of your quotes is don't understand, don't do. Can you highlight that? Can you dive into that as we come to a close?
Yeah, absolutely. And so it goes down to if you don't understand what's going on in finances or a deal, it could be a business deal, it could be a real estate deal. If you don't fully understand it and what your role is in that deal, then just don't do it. There's going to be plenty of opportunities out there. And, you know, I see that a lot of times in real estate, where you have an athlete that is on the hook financially for the deal and it goes bad, they didn't really understand that they were the one personally liable, whereas they had five other business partners, but it was them that signed that they were personally liable for the money side. And now they're out, you know, millions of dollars. And so it can happen on that scale, but it can happen to the small, you know, person that's just trying to make up the right decision in some sort of investment too. So it's okay to walk away from deals. And if you don't understand it, just don't do it.
No, I appreciate that. I think it's especially as athletes that have, you know, big egos, and nothing wrong with egos because it makes us successful on the field. We need to have that to, you know, motivate ourselves to, you know, stay confident, to handle adversity. But when it comes to things that we may not be privy to, whether it's real estate, whether it's business, whether it's investing, we got to, you know, take that humble approach to hopefully, you know, make the right decisions. And there's going to be more opportunities down the road. Don't feel like if you miss one, you're going to miss them all. And I think that mindset, just like you exclaimed, don't understand, don't do, can help you in the long run. Ryan, I want to thank you so much for your time. If there's anything or any place where people can connect with you, please don't hesitate to share.
Yeah, I think LinkedIn, you can find me there. And Instagram is kind of where I'm at right now. And if you want to email me, it's ryan@amustwin.com.
No, I love that. And thank you so much for your time. Please be sure to subscribe, leave us a review. It helps us keep the show running and get wonderful guests like Ryan on the podcast. Appreciate you for your time and definitely, you know, connect with you soon.
Sounds good. I appreciate it. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for tuning into this podcast episode. For more information, check out the show notes and go to our website, www.afrugalathlete.com. If you enjoyed, please leave a favorable rating and review and share and subscribe. Thank you so much. We're living in a time where every move is scrutinized.